This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9. Good morning. You're listening to The Morning Run. I'm Wong Xiaoning, and joining me in the studio is Philip C. It has just gone past 6 a.m. It's a Wednesday, 6th of January, and we are like halfway through the working week already. Where did it go?
Hump day. Hump day. Good morning.
You look like you're ready for the weekend, Philip.
I'm so ready for the weekend. But I've had a good week so far. But it's such a nice feeling that I'm midway through the week. First week of the year.
You're like, I made it. I survived, right?
I survived.
But I don't know. I get the sense that when I'm talking to my friends about the new year, about 2021, there's a little bit of hesitancy because the trauma that we experienced in 2020, right? I mean, there's no denying it was a very challenging year for everybody with COVID-19. Yes. So there's a bit of hesitancy, but I also get this sense there's a lot more optimism in that people are like, oh, this is a new year. We just want to forget about 2020, right? Let's pray we all get the vaccine ASAP and then we can get on with our lives.
They did do a survey that said 80% of Malaysians expect 2021 to be a better year. But I wonder when that survey was done, because I remember like at end December, all of us were like, let's get rid of 2020, and we're so excited into 2021. And now we're in 2021, we think, has anything actually changed?
Well, I mean, it's been 3 days. I think being human beings, right, we have sometimes unrealistic expectations.
True.
And yes, we want the vaccine to come, but we do know the rollout is going to take a bit of time. I think the national vaccination program will be announced, I think, in the next few days.
End of this week, I believe. Yeah.
And we definitely will be covering this on the show, because I want to know, right, what are the plans and who's going to get it first? I think these are all important questions. But what else will we be discussing today?
Well, I think we'll be talking about people starting to break COVID rules when they see those with privilege ignoring them.
I wonder who you're talking about, Who could this refer to? And which examples are you going to cite?
Oh, so few examples, Xiaoning. So few.
And I mean, not just here, but
globally,
right?
It's a microcosm only.
Yeah, true. Meanwhile, I will be asking you about whether you're a secret parent.
I'm not, but I know many who are.
Well, I'm probably guilty as charged. As always, get in touch with us. You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. We'll have more for you in a few minutes. But first is Thorn in My Side by the Eurythmics, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, and that was Thorn in My Side by the Eurythmics. You're listening to The Morning Run. I'm Wong Xiaoning, and of course, I'm joined by Philip C. this morning. It has just gone past 6:07 in the morning. It's a Wednesday, 6th of January. And like you said earlier on, it's just the third day of the working week, right? I mean, but when we think about it, what we have experienced, right? We've been in a semi-states, different forms of lockdown. Yes. Since 18th of March. Where did the 9 months go? It just went like in a blink. And I think the reality is that, yes, the lockdown fatigue is real. And The Guardian, in one of their articles, is questioning whether people are starting to break COVID rules. I'm not surprised because of this lockdown fatigue. But is it mainly the privileged who do it?
Well, this crisis is a long crisis. It's such an unconventional
crisis.
It's
a marathon.
It's a real marathon.
And we're still going through it. So people, if you think that the race is over, it's not.
It's far from over. And it's in waves, phases, here and there. And I think the study, which was done by the UCL, was referencing...
Which is a very posh university
in
England, of course.
Correct. It touches on UK residents, but it's a lot of parallels and similarities with Malaysians.
I think because at the end of it, right, when you think about it, Philip, we are all the same, somewhat, right? Our feelings, our thinking, we are not that different. There are some cultural differences, but ultimately we're still human
beings. Quite similar. Because when they did the study, they actually looked at different phases of lockdown. And in deep diving on the privileged within the society, which is the wealthier and more educated, they found that during the first phase, they were more compliant as their privilege supported their ability to follow the rules.
Yeah, because they could work from home,
correct.
Right?
Spacious gardens,
homes. Nice houses. And then they didn't need to go out unnecessarily because, they could order almost everything in.
That's right. I could go and buy my athleisure from Lululemon, take pictures of my history travel on business class sipping champagne and secure sympathy from Instaverse and try and be an artisan by making Dalgona coffee. There's so
or
many things.
Bread.
Or banana bread. Or sourdough bread, right?
Yeah, sourdough was the hip thing.
Correct. So there were so many things to do in the initial phase of the lockdown. But I believe after that first phase, as people basically, as the crisis stretched out, that compliance began to waver.
Yeah, but it's like you say, you know, it's like the privilege who had a good time. Yeah, I wouldn't say good time. They had a less stressful time, okay? Because I think for some of them, they didn't have to worry about their jobs. They were still getting paid or they could work from home. Whilst a lot of other people, of course, suffered economic crisis, right? Because, you know, if let's say you were a stall, you ran a stall, you couldn't open the nasi lemak stall. Your income was completely zero. There was no alternative because you couldn't go online like immediately either. So for those who were privileged, yeah, I think life was stressful. They probably missed going on their international travel.
Yeah.
They couldn't go shopping as often as they liked. And of course, I think nonetheless, it was probably not the best when you can't meet your friends and family.
Sure.
But it's a bit of a cocoon. But you say like, fast forward to like 6 months, and then now they're like, apparently, according to The Guardian, they're not behaving as well as they should.
That's right. So it's reverse. The privileged then have a greater propensity to bend the rules as the crisis stretches.
Okay, so they say, these rules don't apply to me, is
That's
it?
That's right. I feel I have the power, I have the influence, I'm smart enough to get around the rules and break the rules, so might as well just do it in small little itsy-bitsy pieces, and it just, sikit-sikit lama jadi bukit kind of phenomenon happening here, I think.
I wonder whether this applies to Malaysia too.
Definitely. Of course. I must say, actually, it starts with the small things.
Yeah.
Like if you're breaking a traffic light.
Oh, we've had this discussion.
Had this discussion just exactly yesterday. The small things actually do mount because you're beginning to say, I can essentially follow my own set of rules.
Yeah, because there was no penalty to the person who did it, right?
There was no consequence management. Yeah. And even if there was, it's small relative to your wealth.
Yeah, so what?
So what, right?
It's true. I mean, I think there are many studies that show that, let's say we take this to something like traffic behavior. And you brought up the traffic light. So, and I observe it all the time. So when you're at the red light, and it's a red light and you're stopping in the traffic, if you see cars go by, you see more cars beat the lights. But if everybody just stays there and doesn't move, then there's compliance. But once people start, you know, seeing other cars move and they realize, hey, the cops aren't around, nothing happens, right? Then you see it happen all the time.
And bringing it back close to the COVID issue, I think when the wealthy and privileged post their pictures on social media of them cavorting in the beach, in their bikinis and having parties, the middle classes and those who don't have this look at it and saying, what is happening? Perhaps I can do that too.
Yeah, and I think also it has to be leadership by example, right? Because it's not just the privileged, it's everyone. I mean, especially the people that we look up to.
Correct.
I think they all have to keep to the rules, unfortunately. Well, it's not unfortunate, it's a fact.
True. And the interesting thing now is we don't want people to have their own set of rules because we don't want 32 million sets of rules in this country. And it really has to take and require leadership from the top where they have to role model and set examples. Yeah. Unfortunately, that's not really reflected in Malaysia and also globally. And you see the cases everywhere.
I mean, you just have to look at Donald Trump, right? I think he was the classic, I don't follow the rules.
That super spreader event
with
Coney Barrett.
I don't need to wear masks. And then later I got COVID. But, you know, I'm superhuman.
And interestingly, there are two parallels. If you look at the UK and New Zealand, when one of the ministers actually broke the rules and went to the beach, Jacinda Ardern really went in hard and forced his resignation. Whereas in the UK, when Dominic Cummings went to Durham.
And no, he also went to a castle, by the way.
Castle in Durham, exactly. He basically got away scot-free and only resigned much later.
Yeah, and his excuse was what? He needed to do a test run to see whether his car worked.
Interesting, right? All the way to Durham from London.
But the point is, you're very true. Sometimes, unfortunately, as human beings, we think these rules don't apply to us. And the reality is that COVID-19 is a marathon. Everyone needs to comply with the SOPs. Otherwise, we will never flatten the curve and we will not get back our old lives for the moment. But let us know what you think. You can always WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or tweet us on BFM Radio. Up next, we'll have some messages. Keep it here, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, and that was Date Night by Father John Misty, which I hope you're still having, but at home with your loved ones.
Is he a priest?
I don't know. It's kind of strange. I'm not sure what kind of priest is having a date night. But you're listening to Morning Run with Wong Xiaoning and Philip C. It's just gone past 6:17 in the morning. It's a Wednesday, the 6th of January. And we've been talking about COVID-19. We've been talking about rules and the fact that it applies to everyone. And of course, the other thing we have to talk about in this new normal is parenting. And it's a BBC article asking whether the corporate ideals are driving secret parenting.
Why
the deep breath?
My heart really goes out to all those parents who've had to work at home. It's such a challenge. I've seen it and experienced it. Well, I personally have not, but I've seen many of my colleagues experience it and struggle between work life and personal life. And it all just collides.
Yeah, because there's no balance
anymore.
It's
one big wave and tsunami in just 1 week. And you've got to deal with your boss screaming at you while you're trying to breastfeed your child.
And the other kid is screaming.
And it's like, I want Milo. It's... my heart goes out to many of my colleagues, actually, who are suffering.
Yeah, I think we see that very much on the Morning Run among our colleagues, because some of them have kids. And when we do conference calls, we occasionally hear kids talking in the background, which to me is perfectly fine. It's totally acceptable because this is life, right? This is the reality. Nobody expected you to be able to have to work from home for such a long duration.
Absolutely.
And no school. It's not like the kids have anywhere to go. Of course, school has some for some. School has restarted. I think for the bulk, they'll go back on the 21st of this month. But for the last 9 months, a lot of kids were at home and parents had to juggle work, kids, and their own mental health.
It's a very... I struggle with that. As we started and we were having conference calls, I suddenly heard this bzz, 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 right? And so my colleagues were breastfeeding. Right during the internal call. And in my mind, there was that slight tinge of frustration and irritation. But at the same time, okay, look, this is not easy for them.
Not at
all. How do you make it, that it's acceptable and fine, especially when it's internal meetings? Because your colleagues, your friends, most of the time. So how do you make them comfortable to say, look, all this is fine? Or fine when your child is like, pulling at your dress to say, come, entertain me. And as a man and as someone who's perhaps chairing the meeting, actually, it's incumbent on you to create the environment that, hey, it's okay, actually.
Yeah.
And the line to draw is perhaps internal meetings, you allow that to kind of happen,
right? Because you don't want to make life, honestly, even more difficult for these parents.
That's right. That's right.
But I think there is some truth. I think maybe where you're alluding to is if it's an external meeting, how then do you manage that, right?
It is not so easy, I feel. You are in the sale mode, you're building a transaction and relationship. And so how do you find that space and boundary? It's not easy. But in my view, if you want to build that culture that's acceptable, it has to start internal within the organization. And if every organization begins to do it, then the external relationships become easier to do as well.
Yeah, it's true. I think it's also good maybe if there is a clarity and there are maybe you feel awkward saying these things, but it's probably better if they're said outright. Guys, we have an external meeting. I know those who have kids. Can you just find 5 minutes away from them? Do you think it's possible? What time is convenient for you?
That's right.
So that someone else can take over the parenting duties, even if it's just for 15 minutes. We'll try and do the call as quick as possible. Things like that, I think then they can manage. But just expecting them to do it on the fly, I think that's unfair.
It's unfair. And the time dimension is super critical. Especially depending on the age of the child.
Yeah. So, I mean, if it's a baby, what do you expect?
As a baby, it's very hard. Even as a baby, you feel you can kind of control it a bit because there are certain rhythms you have put in place. As a toddler, that's super tough. So no matter how much you plan, and I've had this conversation with some of my colleagues right before, where they have 5 years old, 8 years old, 12 years old. That's all okay if you plan ahead and say, okay, we're going to have a meeting here and there. Can you find someone to entertain the kid or whatever? They're all quite cool with that. So for those older children, planning is the answer, I feel, because you can kind of plan it out. But when you have a toddler, 3, where there is no sense of order and structure.
You can't explain anything.
You can't explain.
Them. Yeah.
And so you have to be a bit compassionate and kind.
Yeah, but I think also you have to be very... I think as an observer or like the boss, be non-judgmental about these things, right? Because it's bound to happen. And it's like at the end of the day, honestly, when you think about it, it's not a big deal.
That's right.
In this new normal, after all that we've experienced, so a child appears on the video cam, what is honestly, is it the end of the world?
Yeah, exactly. It's fine. And we've seen it before, even pre-COVID with that Korean analyst, a professor, right? Where the
on the BBC.
On the BBC.
Yeah, I think the child just kind of jumped into the screenshot and then the mother desperately trying to pull the child out. And at that time, we thought it was hilarious. But guess what? It was a precursor to what's happening today.
Exactly.
And I think that's fine. There's no need to hide that you're a parent. You don't need to pretend that you're superhuman, that you're super mom, that you can do 1,001 things because it's impossible. I think just be realistic and sometimes tell your boss or tell, you know, and most bosses will be empathic.
I tell you what's not fine. You're in a conference call, your 40-year-old son during a board meeting is screamed at, "Would you like a Milo?"
Who are you talking about?
I don't know.
Who could that be?
Huh? You're going for an external meeting with board members talking about strategy, and suddenly your mom comes into the room and says, "Would you like a Milo?"
Okay, so the point is there are parents who are like with toddlers and there are parents with adult children, but parents also need to play their role, okay?
Yes, exactly.
And sometimes just be a little bit silent. But let us know what you think. WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Up next, we have the news bulletin and to take us there is No Fun by the Stooges, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9. Good morning. This is Shaoning and I'm here with Philip on The Morning Run. And that was "I'll Feel a Lot Better" by The Byrds.
Shaoning, "I'll Feel a Whole Lot Better" once this whole US election is done with.
Unfortunately, it's just going to go on and on and on. Well, it's actually the elections is over. It's just that someone doesn't. Yeah, just someone doesn't want to admit it.
Admit it, right? Yes. Accept defeat.
Well, for some people, it's impossible. And of course, we are talking about the one and only US President Donald Trump, because he has vowed to fight like hell to keep the White House on the eve of a critical Senate election in Georgia. Someone needs to send him a note that he doesn't own the White House.
That's true. Actually, I wonder if he's like emblazoned his name everywhere in the building, right? Okay, this is Donald Trump property.
I wonder whether Melania has just ignored him and started packing because they have to leave, right, by the January 20th.
And there are many milestones. Today is critical day. That's the Georgia elections. Polls will close in an hour and a half's time. Tomorrow, the Senate will confirm him.
Which is supposed to be a rubber stamp thing, isn't
it? Well, we've heard a lot of rumblings and the 12 Republican senators are going to mount a series of challenges. But as you rightly point out, it's unlikely to come to nothing. Although what will happen will be protracted debates, which could last up to 12 hours from what I understand.
In the middle of all this, a so-called economic crisis, a COVID health crisis, you have a president who has, what, less than, what, 14 days to
14
go?
14 days.
And still wants to,
exercise his authority.
Yeah, and maybe, you know, as they say, make trouble for everyone, right? When really, it's if anything, you want the transition to be a smooth one. That shows you're the bigger person, isn't it? You kind of say, President-elect Joe Biden, please, you know, you're coming in 14 days. Here's what you need to know so that you can roll out your plans ASAP. You can, you know, get into the groove and be that executive you're supposed to be. But no, I don't think that's happening, unfortunately, in the US.
I think it's quite clear he didn't take the higher ground. Every US election which involved a transition went relatively smooth, although there was an exception with the Clinton and Bush, where apparently they took the W out from every keyboard. But I think generally, so far, the US transition process has been quite smooth. It has been a bit rocky for this one, where the transition office didn't want to accept that.
And there were issues in the past when you bring up Clinton and George W. Bush, because he was only a one-term president, right? Which is what Trump is. One fallout as a result was that they felt, or at that time, that led to 9/11 because there were security gaps. So I think the important thing is that transitions are, you know, it's a fact of life, even in America, because presidents only last two terms, which is maybe not a bad thing when you think about it, right? I wonder what we're talking about. But the point is then, you know, you're in that zone whereby you hand over what you need to hand over, right? And then you can get on with the task. But I think what's happening today is going to be interesting because it's probably going to be a bit of a, I think, a little temperature check on what people think about Trump and Biden post-elections, because the Georgia runoffs are incredibly important, right? It determines who controls the Senate. And if Joe Biden wins these, or at least the Republicans win these two key states or two key seats, then Joe Biden can roll out what he needs to roll out.
I was putting myself in Trump's shoe. Would he want the Georgia elections to go Republican or Democrats? If they went Democrats, he could say, look, the whole thing is rigged. The whole state went Democrat. So the whole system is rigged. Whereas if the Republicans won, it would be very hard for him to say it was a rigged election. So perhaps he might be quite interested to self-sabotage the Republican Party.
Well, that's
for
what
that.
He was saying. I mean, some of the Republicans were saying that exactly that. And he was kind of semi-encouraging people not to turn up, for the Republicans not to go out there and vote. Because in the first place, the system fails. It's a fraud, right? It's not true. All these vote counting is rigged from the start. So why do you want to participate?
So tomorrow we'll have a deeper analysis of the results from Georgia.
For sure.
We're going to look at the turnout. We're going to see where the turnout's coming out. Is it a Republican strongholds, Democrats? That, I think, will give a good flavor of how the electorate is responding to all the shenanigans that Trump has been
Whether
doing.
It has turned from what is a traditionally very red seat into a purple seat. Mm. And of course, that will also determine whether Joe Biden ultimately can do what he wants. Otherwise, there are questions whether he will remain a lame duck president, right?
Yes.
And he's probably, I think, the first president in the longest time coming into a president, or at least going into the White House without control of both houses. It's
True.
Been a while. So it's a challenge nonetheless.
It'll be a challenge.
But moving on to our neighbour who, and we're not talking about HSR for a change, we're talking about COVID-19, because Singapore has emitted data from its COVID contact tracing program can also be accessed by police, reversing earlier privacy assurances. Now, officials had previously explicitly ruled out the data would be used for anything other than virus tracking, but Parliament was told on Monday that it could be used for the purpose of criminal investigation.
This really got me up my goat, because the Minister of Foreign Affairs, Vivian Balakrishnan, had indicated that they are using the data for serious criminal investigations. But he then stressed to say that once the pandemic is over, there will be no need for contact tracing. We will happily stand down the Trace Together program.
So why do you need to do it in the first place?
Exactly. I'm just thinking,
so
you're
like,
doing it now to do criminal investigations, but after the whole program is terminated, you won't use the data.
So how were you conducting your criminal
investigations prior to that?
Yeah, and
in
post
the future.
This, yes.
So for me, this is where I think the frustration and annoyance by the Singaporean public is, because there's so much backtracking and lack of clarity and transparency.
And trust.
And trust, exactly.
Because your government told you one thing, right?
Yep.
And then subsequently it changed its mind. So then if I'm an individual in Singapore, and apparently 80% of all Singaporeans have downloaded this app.
True.
And the reality is, we know contract tracing has been extremely useful in flattening the pandemic curve. It has allowed a lot of governments to minimize the infection rates. And we see that very successfully in countries like Taiwan, who implemented contact tracing. But there has to be trust in the system, right? You need to know that if I check in a place, it's just really used so that if anything happens, the government can contact me. And I also know whether I'm vulnerable or not. So it goes both ways. But do let us know what you think. I mean, because I think it's essential that we have trust. But up next, we'll be taking a look at the front pages of our daily newspapers and online portals. We'll be back after these messages. Don't go away. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, I'm Wong Shanling with Philip C, and this is The Morning Run. And that was the uber cool Motown song by
Rod
Stewart.
What a great song to wake up
to. Did you almost
want
to go dancing a little bit?
Yes, I was like jigging in my seat, if that's such a word, jigging.
I love his voice though. There's something about it.
You find that gravelly voice sexy, right?
Of course I do, because I sound like Minnie Mouse. But But anyway, we're taking a look at the some of the local stories this morning in the papers. And in front of me is The Star. And, of course, the flood is still going on. That is still capturing headlines. But I'm really looking at this kind of like a headline below the headline. And it's getting hotter and hotter. And it's about the political thermostat rising, because apparently there are moves to fracture the fragile nexus between UMNO and Bersatu. And yesterday in the afternoon, we saw Tan Sri Anwar Musa, who is an ally of the UMNO pact, being removed.
It's a very significant move. It might spell the divorce, and the terms are going to be laid out of the divorce between UMNO and Bersatu, I think.
Which, of course, Ben, begs the question, does this then mean that we're going to have general elections before what is the legal deadline of 2023, I think?
Correct. And I think on Monday, you had some commentators saying that unlikely this year. But with these recent developments, I'm not so sure.
Well, James Chin, who was on the show yesterday, which you can listen to his podcast, of course, on Spotify, on the BFM app, said that at the end of the day, for him, UMNO wants the deputy prime minister seat, you know, he suggested four names, although he won't disclose who those four names, except that we do know, according to him, it won't be Dato Sri Zahid Hamidi. But I think the political temperature is definitely rising. And of course, we will be covering these stories as they continue throughout the day. Because, you know, it is going to be a challenge to have general elections in this COVID-19 era. After all, the infection rates are not coming down. We are above 120 over 1,000. Yesterday was close to 2,000. How can we do this safely, even if vaccines are here?
Well, we'll see. Interestingly, in one of the interviews with the new Secretary General, he did implore that the vaccinations or the vaccine should arrive much faster. So perhaps the silver lining of this is that there'll be a lot of political pressure to just get more vaccines coming in earlier so that they can get the election going.
Who knows?
Who knows, right?
But I mean, as far as I'm concerned, if I can get the vaccine earlier, that'll be better. If we can achieve herd immunity faster, that's even better. But what's in front of you, Philip?
Well, looking at the age, another new premium grocer is going to be launched.
Do we have space for it in Malaysia?
I was just perplexed when I saw this. And it's going to be called QRA Kra, and it's going to be done by the owners of Benz.
The previous owners.
Previous owners of Benz. And I find this so fascinating because you're seeing the proliferation of the $2 store. You're seeing e-commerce just going gangbusters here. And we still have the appetite for these premium luxury grocers. I just find this so fascinating that we have an appetite for this diverse form of retail formats in this country.
But we also see that pretty much globally, right? So in an ironic way, the middle people are the ones that kind of shut down, right? So the middle malls or the middle the departmental stores don't do so well. But anything super high-end, super niche does extremely well. So you either go super expensive, super luxury, or you go super cheap. And then the middle part kind of falters.
Which reflects perhaps the rising inequality in our country.
Sadly, perhaps. That is the truth.
Yeah.
I've got the Malaysian Reserve in front of me, and the headline is "Give Full Disclosure of HSR Cancellation, Government Urged." And it's something we will be talking about later on in this show with Tricia Yeo, who is the CEO with the Institute of Democracy and Economic Affairs. I think there are question marks about what agreement did we sign? How much compensation are we going to pay? Is it $270 million? Is it more? Is it less? Why did we agree to such a thing? Should we cancel the project? You know, all these questions arise.
Two themes come up from that. What was very interesting yesterday was Tok Pak came out to say, look, we are quite clear that the compensation won't exceed 810 million ringgit. What that's evidence is that he knows how to calculate, because previously the Singapore minister said 270 million Sing dollars times 3 with being the Forex. We now know that's the envelope, 810 million. So yeah. I'm quite keen to know how much did Malaysia spend themselves?
Well, we haven't disclosed that so far. Yeah. So I think we'll be definitely following this story. But there's also bigger questions, right? Do we still always want to do infrastructure as a means to stimulate the economy? Should we move away from this? Should it be a greater reset for our country?
Yeah. These concrete monuments, right, of perceived progress, really, is it tangible progress or just perceived progress? Like, it's so nice to see these physical structures being built. It's a sign that we move forward. But perhaps we've come of age, and perhaps there are different ways of measuring growth and development.
Yeah, I think one of the things we should really think about is maybe investment in human capital rather than a highway leading to another highway, which then leads to another highway. The last thing you want to be is like Japan, who in the 1980s, right, tried to stimulate the economy and build highways to islands where nobody lived. But because that was the way people thought it was the only way, then they did it. But the multiplier effect isn't great. And, you know, at the end of the day, what did it bring? Maybe some wealth to the contractors, the building material guys. But other than that, not much. But let us know what you think, because I think this is a discussion that we'll like to continue having on this show. And we've just got a little WhatsApp coming in asking, morning, do you have a new male host? Can't ID the voice. And Bobby, yes, we do have a new male host. Presenter, his name is Philip C. So do tune in because he's going to be on air this week from 6 to 7. But that's all from the local papers this morning. Coming up next is a 7 a.m. news bulletin followed by more business news and analysis where we'll be speaking to Jack Kuzi, Director of Strategy at VFS Group to find out where global markets are heading. But first, here's the happy song by Otis Redding, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.